Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Franklin?
Gotta hold that last keynote. Gotta let
we
it
talk
in.
About food.
Nope.
No, we don't.
No, we don't. Well, we're gonna about to do that. That was just Porches. We have Aaron here live today in studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We'll be hearing a lot more about the band and getting some live music from him later on. But first up,
we have Sushi Co. in the house. You guys want to grab those microphones, put those right in your face? Sorry, we're just... It's Sunday. Hello. We're drinking wine. You were posing. You look so good.
Sorry.
We have to relax today.
Yeah.
It's the day we can.
Yeah. I appreciate it on your day off. You're coming in and doing a little PR. But we have...
Thank you for having us.
Chef owner John Daly in the house and sommelier and beverage director Davis Anderson. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you,
sir. We had a... I've now been there twice. We went there for friends and family. Shout out to Sean. Thank you so much. PR man doing this thing.
PR in the house, how you doing?
And being extraordinary.
And sons.
And then I was in last week with Jamie, my new roommate. And go
there's got to be a better way to word that if you want to have a happy return home tonight.
And we went, we had...
She's not listening, so it's fine.
We had an amazing meal. So, John, let's start with you first. How did you wind up in one of the top-rated sushi spots and smaller sushi spots in New York City? What was the journey? Where did it start?
Long and short of it is after I got back from working in Japan, no sushi bar in town would hire me, so I had to open my own restaurant.
Come on,
really?
Swear to God.
Why wouldn't they hire you?
I don't know.
Come on.
And on the
nights that where it's like 3 a.m. insomnia, total self doubt, there had to be some reason that creeped into the back of the head.
Yeah, well, New York sushi has always been a dream of mine. I don't know any chef. Especially nowadays, who isn't working to get their own place at some point in time, on some level. I appreciate the intimacy that the New York Sushi Go offers and that I have the ability to offer there. Essentially, there's a message I want to conduct, you know, like convey like from myself to the guests, and in such a small setting without channels like runners, servers, expediters, you know, back waiters, you know, the message doesn't get distorted. It doesn't. I mean, it's maybe I'm a control freak. You know, maybe I don't want to be able. Maybe I don't want the responsibility of having a large staff to command or a larger floor or space to take care of. But it's a much cooler vibe at New York Sushi Go. And as far as the journey, it started out washing dishes and making egg rolls when I was 15 in a Chinese restaurant.
Do you want to shout it out? Who gave you your first big break?
But his name is Jimmy Chen. Lucky Jimmy. That's what I call him. That's his little nickname to me.
Lucky Jimmy.
And then how did the Japan education come about?
Well, hold on. Before we get to Japan, I'm assuming you were led there by sushi, right?
Yes. I wound up working for Masato Shimizu at 15 East.
Okay.
And if I adopted him as my master and he adopted me as his student, I could go train with his master. So I went to go train with his master in Japan. That's how...
Is it that formal?
Essentially, yeah.
What are we talking, like handshake, pinky swear, blood swap? What are we talking
about? Well, it's more like, if I didn't follow through with my end of the bargain of being a good apprentice, a good little dog to be kicked sometimes, then it's like shame for like generations of my family to come and like, what's my name in this town? Like, what do you do?
Ooh. Shame card.
If as a chef all you have is your name and your food in a town like New York, it's kind of tough to shit on it over and over again. And I think at some point in time we all wind up putting ourselves in the box or in the doghouse.
Tough.
Yeah,
it's tough to when your trade and your name are so closely related, if not synonymous at times. It's tough not to put yourself in the doghouse because sometimes you need to. Sometimes, unfortunately, walking away is the right choice, even though there's repercussions.
You get a tough Yelp review, something like that. You tell someone to ask someone nicely to leave your sushi bar, that sort of thing. All that stuff will put you right in the doghouse.
Well, that was one of the best things about eating at the restaurant. Jamie and I were at the bar, and this couple showed up late, and they showed up separately. And I believe the guy requested to be at the table. Dave, you can wait. So what happened there?
So what had happened is we had had a last-minute cancellation and had some reservations open up in the evening. So we had Steven, who runs our reservation line, start reaching out to people. This was one of the ones that came in. They said they could be there in 20 minutes. We're like, all right.
Great.
We can fit you in at the bar. We'll get it. Fantastic.
Yeah.
The gentleman shows up first. I offer him the couple seats at the bar. He asks for a different spot. I tell him that because we are going to be tight, I can't give him the spot that he wants.
Right.
And we say, if you don't want these, we can offer you the table. He's like, oh, I'll take the table. And I was like, fantastic. Goes, sits down at the table. His guest doesn't arrive for another half an hour.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
We start moving around because we now have these two seats to play with where we're seating people. And the seats that he wanted, I think you wound up in one of them because we just shifted something around.
Right.
And he goes, you told me those seats weren't available. And then you put these guys in them and just started yelling at me. And that's when Chef jumped in.
Sometimes, it's like... Especially if a customer is going to be, what's the word I'm really looking for? Abrasive.
Abrasive.
That is the
polite way to say it.
Yeah, if a customer is going to be abrasive, then it can go down kind of two ways: stop or go. And go means go elsewhere.
You know, no, it was amazing.
Tone it down a bit, or go means just take it somewhere else, and you can have a wonderful meal. You, your guest, your companion, your attitude can all... extra seats for those.
I mean, there's... it was great. You were, like, so locked in concentration, then you picked not an eye up. You said, you can leave. And then not 10 minutes later, someone from Del Posto walked in, sat right down in that guy's seat, and I'm assuming they had a lovely meal.
Yeah, they did. We got them over to the sushi bar when we had seats over there, and they had a great night with us. Yeah, no, it's... Chef, touch on this. It's an 11-seat bar.
Seats.
And... everyone in there, their vibe is going to affect everyone else's meal.
Oh, totally.
So we want to make sure that everyone's having a good time, and if someone's going to come in with that attitude, they don't necessarily need to be there.
Were the 11 seats just as a result of because of the space you had, or was it, you know, it's like I wanted
Well, it's a capability, too.
Because it's just you, right?
Yeah.
Do you do all the prep?
Conceptually, yeah. Yeah, like if anything that walks in the door to like a plate, like goes through my hands alone. At a certain point, the idea was conceived with, you know, like a sous chef kind of in mind, but the size is small enough to where they're almost in the way, and unless they're really apt at making sushi or have like very similar training or think the way I think, they kind of can't stand behind the sushi bar and, you know, perform making, you know, execute food dishes that I want to make. So it is just me, and so the 11 seats. I didn't want to stretch myself too thin.
No.
Also, I mean, hot. You know, like I don't know. It's New York fucking city, dude. You can get, you know.
Rent is usually one of the biggest costs.
Rent's
on any line budget. So let's just go back before we start to move forward again on your time in Japan. Where did you study? How long were you there?
I was at Sukaroku in Kamedo, which is it's in between Chiba and Akihabara, the electric city. If you have any. You know, familiarity with Tokyo. It's all the Tokyo area. It's about 15 minutes via car from Tsukiji, 30 minutes via train to Tsukiji. I had to take the train one morning because I missed the car ride to Tsukiji. Just slept. I literally saw it driving down the street.
Like, what was a week like? Like, take us through, like, a Sunday through Saturday.
So Sunday is the day you wake up and get to rest and eat. So it's probably better we start on a Monday.
Okay.
Monday's your, you know, it's literally, they're not joking, man. It's 6 a.m. You're standing and waiting for, you know, master to drive you to Tsukiji. And then I would stand, I would wait and collect the fish, you know, that he had selected. You know, and I would, you know, after, you know, the first week or the first month, I would just watch, you know, and I would just watch.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the second month I got, you know, I felt more comfortable asking questions, you know, and I would pick up fish and, you know, he would essentially say, you know, pick out five pieces of this or five pieces of that, you know, and I got to pick them out and he'd go, you know, not this one and kind of tell me why or like point at the reason why. So there's a bit of a, like an actual like learning process involved in going to Tsukiji as well, but just going to Tsukiji and the sights, the sounds, the smells, seeing the process of literally the fish coming. If you stand on the bridge at 5 a.m., you could, or actually 3-4 a.m., you could watch the fish be unloaded off the boat, the back of Tsukiji Market, and then, you know, you walk around and have a snack and have a breakfast, and then, you know, they're just being sold, you know, and there's a day I wanted to see the tuna auction. I didn't want to make my master wake up an hour early to take me. So I just stayed up kind of all night and walked to Tsukiji.
Wow.
Took photos along the way, all the business. And it's, you know, it's New York, man.
Yeah.
You know, and when I got there, you know, I put on my big, dumb, like, rubber Tsukiji boots because it's wet. You know, the funniest thing is to see people treat it like it's a meatpacking district. You're like, yeah, it's cobblestones, but don't wear your high heels there. You know, like, people get off the plane and, like, they'll walk around, like, it's the best way for me to describe Tsukiji is it's kind of like a steel mill, or it's like a definite like work environment, you know. So as a tourist area, it's odd, you know. As a foreigner, I had to see both sides of it. I had to see the side as a tourist, you know, from the eyes of a tourist, you know, coming and visiting and being like, wow, this is so amazing, and wanting to take pictures. But then also from the side of someone working there, to where it's like, wow, like here I am, like actually trying to follow my master, who's like moving quite quickly through the tsukami house, through the, you know, little fish shops, and people get in your way,
yeah,
you know, and I'm sure I was in a lot of people's way too. So it's
civilized.
That's the antithesis of any word I would use to describe CG market. Yeah, as far as a, like maybe like American society, American civility goes, most certainly not. It's hyper Japanese and it's like working and efficiency and just get out of the fucking way before like something bad happens. You know.
I mean, and you know, is it about relationships with the people where they'll set aside certain pieces of fish, or is like first one?
Well,
there?
there's probably let's say there's 200 stalls at Tsukiji. You're only going to shop from about 10 or 12 of them. And, you know, that means there's probably 10 or 12 other stalls selling the same exact thing. You know, there's a lot of people doing the same thing there. And it's the relationships that, that my master has cultivated at this point, you know, with the people that he buys fish from, whether he buys it from, the generation, like the son of the person he used to buy the fish from, or he still buys the fish from the person he has been buying fish from for the past 40 years at Tsukiji. It's really kind of like a beautiful thing to see how it is a very generational, very family, you know, aspect as far as the fish dealing and fish mongering goes at Tsukiji.
Does the same concept of shame and name and reputation come into this, or is it all business?
Yeah, I mean that's all Japanese, man.
Right.
You know, like as far as from my foreign round gaijin eyes, that's what I've seen is there's definitely like you can
get a bad piece of fish.
I've accidentally done it because like for some reason I've for a second I thought I was someone who could do it, and like I realized I'm most certainly and no one who should be doing it, but like I like shamed like this like sales rep, you know, and I was like man, come on, like you guys have like screwed up like 3-4 times, you know, this and that, and like he came in like limping, dragging his foot, like, you know, I'm so sorry, it's like I've been you like training for sushi, like, yeah. I'm so sorry. So I was like, please man, like come on, like just be honest with me. Just tell me, like, dude, like, send me a text. And apparently he got hit by a taxi. So, like, let me know you got hit by a taxi. And I won't, like, put some pressure. I won't put expectations on you, you know. Hence, the shame would be falling upon you and your children.
One question, then we'll play a song.
Yeah, then we'll talk about the new beverage program and the restaurant and everything.
When you went there to train, was there, like, okay, you'll be here for, like, 18 months? Or... how did, like, what was...
Well, I bought the first time I went to Japan, I bought a one-way ticket.
Right.
And I figured, and please, like, I know this is going to sound so awful, I was going to handle it kind of like a Mexican does coming to work in New York, like the illegal, like, border hopping style, where it's like, hey, I have my passport, I got into the country, but you can't work under a visa, so I was just going to go to Korea for a couple of days after 90 days and go back, and it's kind of like, you know, I didn't have a job in America to speak of, you know, and no real ties other than the young lady I was seeing at the time. So I was able to, you know, stay as long as I wanted to. And I was just approaching the 90-day mark when the earthquake of 2011 hit. So I had to, you know, there was an evacuation. You know, my mom was really nervous. And I was like, yeah, let me get out of here. And plus also, every night after the earthquake, it would like, the earth would just shake when I was going to sleep, and it would just shake me awake, like at like, you know, 5 a.m. I was never late. Didn't miss the car ride to Tsukiji during like those few days. And I even went to Tsukiji the Monday and Tuesday following the earthquake. And it was interesting to see like business as usual, you know, all throughout.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And how long were you in Japan for?
Probably a combined total of like 5 months.
Got it.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
So we're here with the boys of Sushi Co. So John, you leave Tokyo post earthquake, and you're back in New York. And what was the road like in between being back in New York to opening the restaurant?
From back in New York, from the earthquake to opening the restaurant, there was also another 2 months spent in Japan. And the main thing that really made New York Sushi Co. happen, you know, in 2012, 2013, more so than like, let's say, 2015, you know, was when I actually thought it probably would happen. It was just the necessity for it to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I actually couldn't get hired anywhere in New York.
What? And, I mean, there's not one thing, not the tattoos, not the...
You nothing. Know, so, you know, but because... So the tattoos didn't hit the hands yet, you know, so I could always cover them up and you could always wear, like, you know, sleeves or compressing, yeah, you know, garments and whatnot. So that's never been too much of an issue, but literally all, you know, like, I went to, like, your Sushi Dens, your Sushi Hatsuhana, you know, and, you know, places that weren't Masa or 15 East where I had worked before. And, you know, there was, sometimes I was received well, you know, they'd be like, oh, hey, I'll pass it along, we can't use anyone right now.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, you know, it's kind of like, I got the old, like, oh, like, kid making sushi, sure thing, you know. I was like, wow, like, here I am, you know, fresh out of Japan, you know, the language is fresh in my mouth, I can speak it with you, you know, and you see my resume, but, you know, essentially it's just, I needed to open the restaurant, I needed to actually do, y'all need to do me, son.
Yeah, it's gotta be me. So the restaurant, it's beautiful.
Oh, thank
9 months.
So far, yeah.
So far, 9 months.
Baby.
And stunning reviews. New York Times, everybody.
Not yet.
Well, no, but
there's
you got the piece that you're mentioning.
We're actually. I will say this, you know, and I'll go. We're sitting around wondering, like,
when that,
like,
time's coming,
because we're the one restaurant from, like, that
article.
That article that hasn't gotten reviews. It's kind of like,
you know,
it's almost like, hey, no news is good news sometimes. Yeah. It's like, don't be so quick to jump into the pan.
His last 4-star restaurant was
Sushi Nakazawa.
So it's going to be a second before he reviews
another sushi
a new sushi spot, unfortunately.
Okay, no, the hate.
Hey,
that actually makes sense. We hadn't thought about that, but that makes a lot of sense.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
So you've been open, and talk a little bit about the food and your approach, because, you know, sushi is such a, you know, it's artistry, it's so personal, and your approach is definitely unique.
Well, the way I feel about sushi is, you know, like, there's a few things, and there's a few reasons why I've, like, shaped my food or how I execute my food the way I do. But sushi, like, just sushi in New York City has kind of been handled until, like, you know, a restaurant like Masa arrived. You know, sushi's been handled essentially the same way. You know, either stripped down pedestrian,
yeah,
or way ultra traditional, you know? Masa came along and there was, you know, and I'm not going to say fusion, but there was a fusion of styles, you know, where it's like, hey, like, you know, you're seeing French food conducted this way, you're seeing, you know, or you're seeing these ingredients implemented in Japanese traditional cooking like we've never seen before. And that, you know, 8-9 years ago, that was kind of something, you know, special for New York City,
yeah,
you know, as I believe it probably still is today. And so sushi's pretty much been taken as in that approach as either, you know, rolls or traditionalist. And my approach, the reason why I execute things with, like, a different flair or whatever execution is kind of a, you know, how can I make my food stand out? You know, if there's, like, 20 or 30 sushi chefs that give a in this town that are actually, like, you know, trying to deliver a product to their customers that's, you know, either superior than the man standing to the left of them.
Yeah.
You know, we all have essentially the same ingredients at our disposal.
Yeah.
You know, there's we all have, like, our own secret connection or our own little special this or special that. You know, but the bottom line is the FDA is going to stop that at some point. You know, that
right.
Like, there's we all have limitations on our devices. So with the same box of, you know, 72 Crayola crayons, you know, it's like, hey, you know, like, how does your skill set use that? You know, and it's kind of like, I'm just trying to think outside the box with it.
With,
you know,
a blowtorch.
Yeah, with a blowtorch.
And
with,
tuna chicharrones.
You know, yeah. You know, so, like,
explain what that is, because that's probably, that's the first time I ever saw it with the the mesh sieve and everything.
Well, so the tuna chicharrón is it's from a piece of tuna lardone, which is typically discarded or pressed for its oil and discarded as a piece of thready sinew or tendon. You know, one of the first lessons you learn as a cook or as a chef or even as a sushi chef especially is
no waste.
Nothing, you know, whole buffalo. So it's why am I throwing this away? You know, why am I throwing this away, or why am I wasting my time beating it up with a spoon trying to get this oil that's either going to be lost on the napkin when I wipe it up or stuck in the certain paper that we store and wrap the tuna in, even when I do chop it up. So I figure I'd leave it intact and work with it as is. And I decided to... What does it look like?
It looks
like you become a chicharrón if you treat it that way. So that's what... A lot, like, I'm... You know, I say oftentimes I'm really simple, like, maybe, you know, and so I kind of do things that are really easier. Like, if it looks like this, let me turn it into that.
Yeah.
You know, like, it looks like this, make it taste like that. You know, like, you know, red equals red, you know, like.
And the other thing before we get into the beverage program is that you also do aged fish.
I've started to
which is, you know, because when you think of sushi, you think you know, fresh out of the water onto the plate, but you actually age sushi a couple of days.
Yeah, so I've started to experiment now and kind of take what I observed at Tsukiji to more of like a full on level, and that's by aging tuna myself. And you know, chefs speak of it, and you see it happening. At Tsukiji Market, they'll get a fish, and I would watch a loin that would have a certain marking on it, you know, a certain quarter of a tuna, be rotated from one refrigerator to another refrigerator, and then, you know, as time would go by, I would look, and there'd be different temperatures on the refrigerators, you know, they'd have different dressing, and the size of it would change, but the piece of paper would remain the same, so it was the very same loin being circulated and being aged. Usually at Tsukiji they age between, you know, 7 to 9 to 14 days, depending on the size of the loin. I know that if I get a fish, typically a tuna, it's probably been out of the water, handled before I get it, at least 3 to 5 days, you know? So I've been taking, you know, my loin, and I've been aging it, you know, in my own fashion, you know, and kind of, you know, essentially applying what I saw at Tsukiji to, you know, just applied science. Like, hey, like, this is... And so the first time I got to experiment with it was on my week off, because if I'd never got a week off after the New Year, I would have never been able to actually do it. But I got to actually, you know, monitor its temperature and literally watch it and check in on it, you know, 3-4 times a day for the 3-4 days. And then, so, the restaurant opened back up again, and the second load of tuna I got, since then I did the same process, I aged it in the same fashion, and, you know, kind of achieved success with it. So it's
awesome. It's fresh but a little funky. It's like, unlike, it's tender too.
Yeah. Super the tender. Main reason why I do it is for the texture.
Yeah, the texture of the totally ikami,
of the red meat, and also to bring out really the when you eat, like, almost like a truffle, or when you take a drink of wine, the exhale, you know, like when you breathe out through your nose. Uni does this for you. You know, truffles do it for you. Caviar can do it for you. And some fish lends itself to have the ability to do that, like sabas and mackerel fish and hakirimono can do that. And tuna, there's a giant jackfish that can also do it as well. And I just, that's where I took that one. You know?
It's amazing. Now, one of the other new additions to this year is Davis.
Davis is the man. Yeah.
Davis as the Somm and Beverage Director, which, you know, for an 11-seat restaurant, you would not expect a full-on Somm standing there taking care of all your...
I never thought I would need one, you know, but it's one of those things where the way I want to play with food and also the hoops I want to jump through, that I put myself through. Like, I purposely challenged myself throughout the evening to, like, make it interesting for me. So I want someone who can respond to that, and I wasn't getting that out of a server, you know, or the bar that I had set for the position. So, you know, I'll let Davis, you know.
Yeah, so Davis.
Thank you, Chef.
So what is your approach looking at this menu and putting together the beverage list?
Well, like any beverage director who steps into a position, I inherited a large list when I came in. And I know there have been some reviews on it that have said that it was good but not great. And I think it was really well suited to what Chef was doing. When I came in, it just wasn't necessarily being implemented in the right way. And I think doing the beverage pairing program was something that Chef wanted, and I think something that we needed to really show what that list can do. I've started bulking it up and adding a few things, but much like there's only 11 seats at the bar, there's only so much room to store so much wine.
Of course.
And sake, of course. I think probably the biggest challenge so far has been getting people to realize they can have Western wine with some of these dishes in addition to sake.
No, it's great. The balance is great. The choices are great. What's your favorite food and drink pairing there?
And also, let me put you on the spot too.
Oh, yeah.
How do you, because of how I like literally just go off the cuff, how do you in your mind like pair on the spot to food being put on the spot, like to drinks being put on the spot, which doesn't happen too often?
No. Well, I was very lucky that I had taken a year off from working in restaurants and was working distribution, which is how I met Chef, and I started eating at the restaurant quite a bit before he brought me on. So I've seen a lot of the flavors and a lot of the processes that he plays with. So I kind of know what he has in his coloring box. And like, you know, you said you have 72 Crayola crayons. I give myself a couple of Crayolas to play with, and hopefully we draw a picture that goes well together.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I lost your question after his.
My question was just your favorite pairing between food and...
My favorite pairing... Well, the dishes are always changing, but for me, it's probably as we get into those last little bits of Toro. Most people will see like the last piece of Otoro, which is done with a little ginger soy glaze. I've just brought in a really cool sake from Tamagawa that is called Time Machine. And it is a recipe that the Toji there, a British gentleman, found from 1712 that he just didn't recognize and started playing with. And it's more like Riesling in style. It's got a higher sugar and higher acid content. It's really kind of funky and out there, but it's delicious. I've only had a couple of days, but everyone I put in front of, especially with that piece, seems to be freaking out about how good it is. And I did it because I was freaking out about how good it was.
That's awesome. Well, boys, there's not enough time to talk about all the amazing things you're doing. For such a small restaurant, it's really doing some big things. Stick around, hang out. Thank you so much for the wine.
Ah, my pleasure.
And for those who are trying to get reservations there, what's the best approach?
Always the best approach is, text the reservation line. Get in touch with Steven. It's, always the best way to get in touch.
Should I just plug it real quick?
Plug it.
just please, 917-734-5857. Or anytime after 10 p.m., because we're open until about 1 a.m., because don't be afraid to stop in late.
Yeah, if you're
we're
in the hood,
usually
come
having
in.
A lot of fun, nicely tuned up, and just come on in and get some fish and some rice.
Do you get a lot of walk-ins that late at night?
We do. Yeah.
That's we'll awesome. Be there till like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning aloft and with neighborhood locals. It's great.
Yeah, we'll do like half our business after 10 p.m.
And then what time are you back in for prep?
What's that?
What time are you back in for prep?
Between 10, 11, 12 a.m. the next day.
Nuts. And real quick, the website.
NewYorkSushiCo.com.
Yeah, www.NewYorkSushiCo.com, I guess.
Awesome. Guys, so rad. I'll be back soon.
Please.
Look forward, awesome.
Forward to having you.
Yeah. Please.
Is it wicked? And can I lick it?
welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for having me.
Riding solo today.
Yes, sir.
Band, how was the show last night?
Show was last night. Baby's all right. It was great.
Yeah. Shout out to those guys.
For sure.
They'll be on the show in a few weeks. Whole takeover hour. So I first saw you guys play at Cameo maybe like a few weeks ago, and then did some digging and realized that you were prolifically live show playing band. Almost all the comments are like, this band plays a ton in Brooklyn, which is great because I feel like there's some bands who are like, it's our backyard, we're going to play like 3 or 4 times a year. What's your, what led you guys, do you guys say yes to everything, or is it, how selective is it?
We try and keep it to like 2 New York shows a month so as not to oversaturate our hometown.
Yeah.
But we pretty much go out every weekend if we can to Philly or upstate, Western New York, Vermont sometimes.
Where in upstate New York?
New Paltz, Bard, the colleges up there, okay. SUNY Purchase.
How are college, I mean, it's been, I think, probably like 8 years since I've been to a college show, since I left college.
Yeah. 8 years? What was your last college show? Oh, Matt and Kim.
Yeah. Actually, I take that back. I went to go see a college show maybe like 5, 6 years ago, and I was like, well, I'm not old, but I felt old. But how are college shows? Or I mean, how do they differ from like where, you know, playing Williamsburg or Shea Stadium?
College shows are great. I think a lot of the time the kids are excited to have some band come to their school right off the bat, you know, because they're often secluded in places where they can't really get out of there.
Yeah.
And they also have a lot of money to pay us.
Yeah, you know, I did I mean, I did college. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we both booked shows in college.
Except I went to, you went to a private school and I went to a public university and we had no money. But every booking agent was like, it's a college, it's a payday. So no one would come play our university because they thought we were lowballing them. We just didn't really have any money. But I mean, it's also because you're dealing with like 18 or 19-year-old like bookers who have no concept of budget.
They're well, we try not to shoot too high. You know, if we enjoy hanging out at the place, we'll go there.
And do you stay over or do you like play the show and come back?
It depends.
What does it depend on?
How far it is. Yeah. If anyone is up for driving back, staying sober.
Yeah. If you get someone to swipe you into the dining hall.
Yeah, that's always a treat, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun sometimes to stay over and hang out, meet new people, and get breakfast in the morning. It's a whole nother experience at that point. So
at the dining hall. I mean,
at the dining hall, like, or the local diner.
Yeah, it's like 15 different types of cuisine all in a swipe. Or yeah, the diner experience is also awesome. Just like bottomless cup of coffee, 2 eggs, hash. What's your diner? What's your general diner?
Yeah, menu? I like the standard 2 eggs. Over easy, scrambled, rye toast. Just check it out.
Rye toast. That's kind of like that's
the coffee.
Jam.
I love shitty coffee.
I don't think I've ordered anything else other than 2 eggs in some form in the last. That could be my last meal if I was on death row. 2 eggs.
2 eggs.
2 eggs toast.
3 eggs sausage.
But you know they probably wouldn't have rye toast.
Imagine you were on death row and you ordered like 2 eggs over easy and they came out hard.
Oh, the yolks weren't running?
The yolks weren't running? Could you send it back?
Can we put this off a little
longer and
get the eggs?
Hey, listen, man. I ordered this over easy. This is over hard.
So take us back a little bit to the start of Porches and a little bit of self-history.
Well, Porches started, I think, beginning of 2010. I had just dropped out of college. I was studying painting at SUNY Purchase. And I went on tour with my old band for about a month and a half. One of our friends took us out, and once I had a little taste of that, I kind of knew that, you know, I wanted to really continue performing and touring and pursuing music as much as I could. So I decided to not go back and have been pursuing it since. And so once we got back from that tour, I feel like it was a very big learning experience, and I wanted to start from scratch. So I found this keyboard on tour, and when I was home, you kind of get like post-tour depression sometimes when you're out there every night and like you play and it feels great and it's fun, and then you get home and you're like, oh man, like when's the next one? So that's when Porches started.
Get back on the road all the time?
Well, you know, as the years have gone by, it's less, the kind of glitter of touring has worn off a little bit. It's still fun. But anyways, I was back at my mom's house, no job. So I was in the basement every day working on these tracks, and that's how Porches came about.
What were some of the lessons that you learned from being on the road? What was the band you went out with? What was it?
It was called Space Ghost Cowboys, and we were supporting the solo artist Ramona Cordova.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I just, up until that point, I had lived a pretty sheltered life in the suburbs, and you know, I went to college 20 minutes away at SUNY Purchase. So just to travel and like meet all these new people making really exciting music was really inspiring, and kind of lit a fire under my booty to step it up.
Can we hear a song?
Yeah. I will play a song. It's called Zanibar. Does your knuckle tattoo say nice fish?
Fish and rice.
Fish and rice. Yeah. I'm going to get one that says nice fish.
I'm going to get one that says Zanibar. That'd be a better one.
I couldn't help from noticing you across the bar. Hello, I'm running, I'm falling apart. Do you want me back? Like I want you. You said I'm Edith and I've always been a mess. Well, nice to meet you. Maybe we'll undress, but we could just slide down. We both could use the rest so I hold on, I hold on to a dimwit cigarette, and I take a deep breath, 'cause I know I fell to greatness when I laid within your grassy realm. Crawled across the floor to a patched up helm. Your hips the balmy swell in porno hell. And I said, hey, would you wanna join the loner metal band? And you said, maybe we could just hold hands. Well, if that's the only place they'd land, I'd die a happy boy. So I hold on, I hold on to a dimwit cigarette, and I take a deep breath, 'cause I know you can't, I know.
Awesome. So from mom's basement to playing your first show as Porches, what was that journey?
Well, I recorded the first Porches EP with my friend up in Ithaca. It was 5 songs. I released that before I had any band together, and was asked to go on tour again, and I was just going to try it by myself with an iPod and singing. So there was like a little stint where that's how it went. And it was funny. It was okay. You know, it's definitely not like playing in a band. So then I got a guitar player to play while I sang to the iPod. And then ultimately we got a drummer. For a while we were using the electronic backing tracks. Yeah. And then once the band was in order, we kind of did away with that because it was more trouble than it was worth at that point. Just,
yeah,
I was not having that much fun performing it.
Well, I mean, there's no spontaneity.
Like, right.
You're like,
it was just play. Like the dictator of the band was the iPod, and it was, you know.
Hey, man, he's being a real dick today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real dick.
So we kicked him out. Yeah. And,
Just snapped it in half.
There you go. I don't think you're working out.
Yeah. Siri, can you fire?
Yeah.
Can you fire, yeah, please? But funny and okay in early days is kind of awesome. I mean, it's frustrating then, but to like be like, you know, these are just, you know, early days of figuring stuff out.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good, long, slow process of getting the group we have together today. But, you know, it's worth it because it's the best group Porches has had yet, so happy.
And you want to shout out your band members?
Yeah, I would like to do that. There's Cameron Wish.
Shout out.
Out in Bushwick on drums. Greta Klein. Frankie Cosmo's having a band practice in Crown Heights. Kevin Ferrant is on his day off. His teacher. And then there's Say Jewel. Also his day off. Works at a Japanese restaurant. In
Look at that crossover. Snacky Tunes. Bringing Snacky Tunes. Guys in bands. Who work with guys in Japanese restaurants and a guy. Anyway.
But as far as, you know, the evolution, so where does the songwriting process sit now, or is it still you and they execute, or how does it work now that you have, you know, outside influences?
Well, I always have written the songs first, often demo them first, and up until this record that we're starting to work on now, I've gone to the studio by myself first for a couple weeks and laid it all out, and then we learned them as a band after the fact. Mm. Which was okay, you know, it's interesting, but then you start coming up with these ideas that you wish you had thought of before you
laid
pressed
it down.
It. Yeah. So yeah, at this point, this is the first time we're really working out the tracks all together. I've recorded like 20 new demos for the new record since the summer, and kind of like slowly choosing which ones to work out with the band and have my demos and meet somewhere in between this time.
Got it. You want to play us another song?
Yeah, I'll play a new track that we've been...
Porches, live on Snacky Tunes.
Man, I wish there was a place that I knew.
sang on the train. Everything will be okay, and I wanna believe that all I need is some security. All I want, security.
Nice. I want to go back to comment you said about going on the road, kind of like expanding and like opening your mind. It's like, how is your world outlook and how has being a musician changed since that first tour? You know, what have you kind of come to understand that you maybe didn't quite see beforehand?
Well, first off, there's a lot of live music that I hadn't seen live before. It's totally different when you see someone doing it in real life. You're like, oh, that's cool, that's possible, and it kind of just opens up that whole realm. And I don't know, it was just, you know, the whole thing about it was appealing to me, just being on the road, long drives, meeting new people, and scraping by, doing what you love to do more than anything else. It was the first time that, you know, I had done it and realized it was possible, so I just wanted to continue doing that.
You know, it's very rare that anyone can say that they've done the thing they love to do the most.
Yeah, I have to be very good at telling myself that, because every now and then the real world swings at you pretty hard, and you have to just reassure yourself that you're in the right place, because there's nothing else that I would rather be doing, and it's difficult sometimes. But yeah, not to get all cheesy, you get one shot, so you may as well do what you love at all costs.
I mean, I think that what a lot of people say, and I'm sure Chef, you can weigh in on this, is that like doubt truly never goes away, and I think that if it does, you're living in a dangerous place.
Yeah,
where
I think the moment you think you make it, or the moment like you're like, ah, oh, we've arrived, or oh, yeah, I got it, is the moment you actually suck, or the moment you start to fall off. So it's like, just don't ever. Like, you'll know when you've made it when you look back and you see like a fucking trail of, you know, shit kicked out of your way. You know, or like.
It's funny, they don't.
Or a trail of shame. You haven't made it. You know?
They don't really teach that, or that's not really in society anymore, that it's going to be failure and you're going to have missteps. It's all about instant success and winning, and no one tells you really that. I mean, and if the story is about struggle, it's a very nice, prepackaged, really easy to swallow, that at the end of the road of struggle, there'll be success. No one ever tells you that. It's mostly no's and failures for a long time. That's sprinkled in with achievement and things like that. It's tough.
Peppered lightly and seasoned with, you know, slight gratification, but the bottom line is, you know, as long as you're, if you get on stage and you're happy, as you look into the mic and you're happy, dude, if I look down the cutting board at like the fish I have, like that my knife is sharp enough to cut through this beautiful fish, like it's that moment. Like, hey, this is where we are. You know, like yeah. this is what it's about. It's not about reading your name in the paper, or like, you know, like pushing some link on your phone to like some blog about you sort of thing. Like, that's not arriving. You know, arriving is being able to do what you love, and not having it be a fucking hobby. Pardon me. You know, like, not having it be like you're not doing it on Saturdays and Sundays anymore, right? You're not in your mom's basement anymore. You're doing what you want to do. You know, like, I'm not just making sushi for my girlfriend on my day off. Now I'm not buying salmon and making, you know, like salmon rolls or like little salmon like tartars anymore, like I did when I was 24. You know, like,
lucky girl.
You know, yeah,
yeah.
Tell her that.
No, fucking hobbies into fucking careers is fantastic.
Yeah. Dreams, baby.
Dreams.
And dare to dream.
And Aaron, you were talking about this while we were playing a song. It's like now people are telling you, like, you know, that it's a career, or, you know, using that word.
Yeah. It's just starting to seem like it could, you know, turn into some sort of a sustainable thing for however long, you know, who knows. It's all been a very slow burn, and there's been no serious breaks or kind of buzz that just shot up. So I feel like a lot of people are rewarded, you know, a slow burn. It's a slow, steadier success. You don't just shoot up and shoot down. So it's exhausting sometimes, and it's frustrating to just have been at it and just see, you know, so many of my friends just beating me to it. But what I've been thinking about lately is that even if I tried to stop, I couldn't. So there's no point in wasting my time being upset about that shit. I just have to just keep doing what I'm doing.
I mean,
I'm hoping we got linked up with a nice booking agent working on the new record.
And,
so we'll see.
Tour in 2 weeks, right?
We're going on tour in 2 weeks. Yep, going out to Chicago and back.
Nice.
18 dates in a row. Should be interesting.
Are you going out with anybody, or is it?
Just going out with the band.
Nice.
That's great. And you're headlining, or are you opening, or?
We're headlining. Yeah, I booked the whole thing.
DIY, man.
DIY, all to the max.
Can you imagine doing that back in the day with no internet and emails?
I think about that every now and then, because when you start to book a tour, it is all consuming. Those 3 months leading up to it. You're just on the computer all day waiting for people to get back to you. And
it's like, I need this one day to fall in place. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, your dreams should exhaust you. Like,
yeah,
that's just what it is. It's just
You're not tired,
that's, I mean,
well, the thing is, yeah, I mean, it's nice to have a booking agent now, because I could spend those three months working on music. John Chavez.
Hey, man. John is amazing.
You're a beautiful man.
Yeah.
We're excited.
Dude, all
to be
the PR
on board.
People, all the booking, all the guys and girls behind the scenes, they're the best. I mean, they're the best.
John is one of the hardest working booking agents I've ever met.
You got a good guy.
Yeah.
You got a good guy in your corps.
Got a real good feeling with him.
Yeah. So listen, we got to wrap it up because we have another show coming in, but
and we got one more song.
But shout out to Shushiko. Shout out to Porches. Do you want to give us the nuts and bolts of where people can find you online, or, and, you know, albums and all that stuff and shows?
Yeah, you should check out Porches Music at band.bandcamp.com.
Shout out to Bandcamp.
Porchesmusic.bandcamp.com. Shout out to Bandcamp. Look us up on Facebook. Ronald Puri on Tumblr.
And what is that on Tumblr?
Ronald Puri.
Okay. And for all booking inquiries, just reach out to John.
Yeah, hit up John.
Oh, can I mention one thing about Shushiko? That the soundtrack is like 90s hip hop, and it's amazing. It's delicately made sushi thing that, and it's just Regulators.
Yeah,
Mount up, man. Last
thing is, we have our final bar food blowout
of the first season
which is going extremely well. It's a on March 11th, tickets are on sale now.
Speedy Romeo, Justin in the house.
And Sin Kane, a Snacky Tunes favorite, will be on the digital ones and twos.
It's a barfoodmarch.eventbrite.com. $20 gets you a plate of food, a shot of whiskey from Powers, and Brooklyn Brewery beer. Yeah. $20. So you get to kick it with us. And all the Tall Day Pork Slip guys will be in the house.
Cool. All right, well, thanks for everyone coming by. Aaron, take us out. With one more, what's the name of this song?
In the Mood? Ooh. Another new jam.
New jams here on Snacky Tunes.
I just wait around to good news.
to hear the good news. I just wait around to hear from you, to hear from you. Are you in the mood? Oh, I think I said the wrong don't wanna be here. Don't wanna be here. I just wait around to hear the good news. To hear the good news. If you want to be on your
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.